We look back at this year's battles over government powers in the COVID-19 pandemic. Vaccine mandates, local health officials, and the governor suing the legislature on this special episode of Indiana Week in Review.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller, a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
Governor Eric Holcomb sued the Indiana General Assembly over legislation that would give lawmakers more authority to intervene during a public emergency. Legislative leaders say the lawsuit is not a surprise, calling the issue a fundamental disagreement with the governor. Many lawmakers felt sidelined during the COVID-19 pandemic as the governor issued dozens of executive orders, some of which legislators openly opposed. To give themselves more opportunity to intervene in the future, lawmakers passed a bill that allows them to call a special session of the General Assembly during a public emergency. But Holcomb, supported by some constitutional experts, believes the Indiana Constitution exclusively gives the governor that power, and he's suing to find out for sure. There is no timetable for how the lawsuit will play out, though Holcomb, in his filing, says the constitutional question should be answered as soon as possible. He says the law creates uncertainty and confusion, and its consequences could be severe. Andalini, Attorney General Todd Rokita this week said he didn't give the necessary permission for the governor to hire outside counsel and bring this suit. So, will there be procedural issues like that that prevent answering the core question?
You know, I think Todd Rokita is so busy grandstanding running for governor that he hasn't bothered to look at what the statutes say. You need the Attorney General's permission when it's two state agencies. The governor and the legislature are not state agencies. They're two co-equal branches of government, as are the courts. And they're supposed to decide disputes between co-equal branches of government. Todd Rokita doesn't know what he's talking about, which is not at all uncommon. But the fact of the matter is, this is exactly what the court is designed to do. This is, I think, an unconstitutional invasion of the governor's prerogatives and powers, and the court will decide it. And Todd Rokita is irrelevant to this. And he ought to go back and he ought to look at what the law says, because, you know, if he's correct in his interpretation, then he has an ethical conflict. And he hasn't even addressed that. But he's not correct in his interpretation. The governor does not need his permission to bring the lawsuit.
What does Todd Rokita's insertion into this process do for how it all plays out on a sort of political level?
Well, it makes it look really well planned, like we did this on purpose, and this is exactly what the Republican Party had planned all along. The implication that the Attorney General can block a constitutional question between two branches of government he's not a constitutional officer. It's created by statute. I don't disagree with that. I thought we should have done that when we did superintendent. Do it all at once.
I think so, too.
This creation of statute could be the traffic cop between a constitutional question between these two branches, the executive and the legislative. Of course the judicial branch should determine this. And if we find that they can't, or that the law doesn't permit that, then that law needs to be changed. That's a huge problem here. If true, which I was interested in when I was thinking through this week, I was interested in hearing Ann's answer just from a legal standpoint. But that's a bigger problem. And even if we're only here because the governor said you had to wear a mask, right? Like with everybody else in the world, like literally like global mask mandate, and Indiana went along with it, and the conservatives freaked. That's the only reason we're here. But it's got to be answered. We have to understand the answer to this question the governor's asking the court.
Yeah, that's exactly what I want to ask you, John. How important is it that we get an answer to this core fundamental or core constitutional question that is being posed?
I think we do need an answer, and that's why our government is set up the way it is, for the judiciary to step in and answer, not step in, but when asked to step in, and to be the proverbial referee, as Chief Justice John Roberts of the U.S. Supreme Court likes to say. This is the ultimate answer of calling balls and strikes. If this isn't a classic example of, you know, interpreting In this case, the state constitution, I don't know what is.
Nikki, you did a fair amount of reporting on the issue that Todd Rokita is raising here. How much do you think how much of a stumbling block to getting to this constitutional question do you think that will be?
I think it'll be somewhat of a stumbling block. Back in 2013, Superintendent of Public Instruction Suellen Reed tried to sue the State Board of Education, and it was tossed specifically because they weren't given permission by the Attorney General to file it. So, this law has...
Glenda
Ritz. So this law has been used before. The only thing we can hope for is that Speaker Houston and Senate President Pro Tem Rod Bray, as clients of Todd Rokita, direct him to focus more on actually getting an answer for the citizens than on defending the powers of the Attorney General's office.
How does he defend the powers of the attorney? How does he defend the powers of the legislature against the powers of the governor when he's the Attorney General of the state? Why is that not an ethical conflict for him?
Well, some people say it is, but obviously...
Well, some people... It is an ethical conflict, and he can't be involved in the decision.
The political irony of this is it should alarm conservatives that an office created by a law that was passed is now taking it upon himself to say what's constitutional, what isn't, or whether you can even ask the question to a branch of government.
Yeah, and what if he does that? What if he stands up and opines on another issue, not this one, but on another issue, and he says it's constitutional? Does that make it constitutional?
And what if they're different parties, and now you have the Attorney General who's the gatekeeper on the courts deciding whether an abortion law is constitutional, which
is why the Attorney General should be appointed and not elected.
Absolutely.
Well, local health officials across Indiana can no longer impose emergency rules stricter than the state's after Republicans overrode the governor's veto this week. Instead, local legislative bodies, county commissioners or city councils, will have to enact those restrictions. The bill arose after Hoosiers complained to their lawmakers that local health officials went too far during the COVID-19 pandemic, shutting down or restricting some businesses. Republican Senator Chris Garten says those sorts of decisions are too powerful for unelected officials to make on their own.
I would contend that actions and decisions of such magnitude should have a check and balance.
But Democrats call the bill an unwise overreaction. Senator Shelley Yoder says health decisions should be made by experts, the local health officials.
What this veto override would be to introduce more bureaucratic and political pressures and putting Hoosiers' health at risk.
The bill took immediate effect. And, Delaney, four vetoes over the last two sessions, three of them overwritten. To the average Hoosier, we've talked a lot about the veto overrides and how there's potentially less of a split between the legislature and the governor than it would seem. But to the average Hoosier, what do all those veto overrides say about the governor's relationship with the General Assembly?
Well, I think it indicates that he's at odds with the supermajority in the General Assembly. I think that's pretty obvious. But I actually think that Governor Holcomb's tried to do the responsible thing, not as much as I would like to see him do it all the time, but I think at least he's tried to steer a more middle-of-the-road course between the crazy anti-scientist wing of his party and people who wanted him to really lock down the state to keep COVID under control. So I think he's done a relatively good job of that. They, on the other hand, are only worried about what's going to happen with redistricting and whether or not they're going to be challenged in their primaries by the right wing of the Flat Earth Republican section. And so they want to show that they're really with Donald Trump, even though it's interesting that his name never comes out of their mouths. Nobody ever talks about Donald Trump, but they all take positions that he would find favorable positions to take. And I think that's what's at war here. You know, Governor Holcomb's trying to appeal to the state and trying to protect the state, and they're worried about their little fiefdoms and the right wing of the Republican Party. And that's why having these supermajorities is really so destructive with the gerrymandering.
What are all these to the...
You just worked it all in, didn't you?
Am I wrong?
You worked in... I forgot about the vigorous Trump debate over local health control.
Swine barn. The swine barn had been in...
And gerrymandering.
I mean, you have to wear masks.
Throw the swine barn and corporate tax rates in.
You got bingo.
Yeah. We can review bingo.
But to the person who doesn't follow politics quite as closely and seen the debate over this issue play out the entire session, what do all these veto overrides... Admittedly, the governor in the state has a weak veto. But what do all these veto overrides say about that relationship?
There's not many of them. I mean, they passed, it's 1%, less than 1%. I mean, they introduced 1,100 bills and passed 300 or 400 of them, and he vetoed three of them or four of them. And three were overridden, most of which were COVID-related, which there is a lot of political pressure on right now. You know, Shelley Yoder's point that you've introduced, like, this political element to a local health decision, fair enough, but right now, I mean, I think if you ask somebody 18 months ago, ask a local health official 18 months ago where they get the most complaints in county government, the answer is going to be the health department, because they tend to be punitive, they tend to overreact. That was my experience as county chairman. They tend to come down hard in ways they don't need to. There have been complaints about local health departments in this state forever, whether you're talking about septic systems or COVID mandates. So to kick this to the county commissioners and say, the health department's going to ask for this and you've got to ratify it. And by the way, the people who are ratifying it are elected officials. Of course there needs to be a political component to this. That's the system we picked. We fought a whole war over it. The idea that we've just taken this power away and given it to elected officials is insane. This is the way literally the whole system works, whether it's the BMV or the local health department. Ultimately, there's an elected official in charge of ratifying that decision.
To that end, if you kind of take COVID out of this, this isn't one of those, and we've talked about those issues where is it local control or state control and the push and pull there. This is, should an elected official be accountable for these decisions or should an appointed official be accounted for these positions? In that sense, if you do take COVID out of it, which is hard to do, admittedly, but does it seem that absurd a notion, this bill?
Hard to take, as you suggest, COVID out of it, because that's shaped our thinking and our legislating in this state and 49 other states now for a year and a half. I guess it's philosophically there is some ideological consistency in saying that you should have these local decisions in the hands of people who are elected. Having said that, though, health departments, not just through COVID, but since, you know, probably close to the founding of Indiana, or certainly in the modern era, have always had more latitude because they are seen as having greater expertise. They can move quickly because a lot of times, you know, we're now, the CDC's new report this week talked about last February, or not this February, but the one prior, as being the lost month because everybody sort of just twiddled their thumbs. And that's kind of what elected bodies, I'm not knocking them, but that's what they do. They're deliberative bodies. They don't tend to act as quickly as medical professionals. And that's why I think we've had the system grow up that we have. So it may satisfy those. You know, it didn't matter who issued these edicts. People are going to be mad. If it's the elected officials, they're going to want their scalps. If it's the health officials, they're going to want that scalps. Or you just had people who did not want to be told that they couldn't go out, that they couldn't go to their favorite tavern, that they had to wear a mask, that they couldn't meet with their friends, period.
And we've already seen, though, the ripple effects in a couple of different places this week, right?
Elkhart and Tippecanoe both let some of their restrictions lapse after they were overturned. I do want to point out we should take COVID out of it, though, because some of that bill affects things that are non-COVID related. And, you know, now I don't think the commissioners have thought through, you know, every time the health department, let's say, does a boil water advisory, and let's say someone doesn't want to boil their water, they want to keep their restaurant open, they're going to get an appeal because this sets up an appeal process. Every time they shut down a restaurant because they had rats or something, you know, they're going to get an appeal because that you know, restaurant doesn't want to shut down. They're going to get a lot of things appealed to them that they never had to deal with before.
The Indiana House recently dismissed an attempt by one lawmaker to ban any COVID-19 vaccine mandates in the state by anyone. But that likely won't be the last time the issue comes up in the General Assembly. Republican Representative John Jacob tried to introduce an amendment to the redistricting bill that would bar anyone from imposing a COVID-19 vaccine mandate that includes negative consequences, such as being fired, fined, or banned from a facility. The House refused to consider it. The amendment violated House rules, so there wasn't even a vote. But after the House floor session, when Republican Speaker Todd Houston was asked whether he supports the idea, he said he struggles with it.
But I know that it's going to be a discussion that's taking place right now across members of our caucus. We'll have I'm sure that'll be a discussion over the next couple of months.
Houston has said repeatedly that lawmakers' current work at the state house is solely on redistricting, so any legislative action on vaccine mandate bans shouldn't come until next session. Nikki Kelly, do you think the General Assembly will ban COVID vaccine mandates next session?
I don't know if it'll get all the way through, but there is clearly a core conservative group who will push that hard. You know, I think there will be hearings, there will be bills, and, you know, I would say it's a toss-up right now whether it would happen. It's quite a tightrope, though, for Republicans, because in general, they sort of stand for the ideals of staying out of private-run business, right? But this is would tell what a private-run business is or isn't allowed to do with their employees. So it will be an interesting discussion for sure.
John, I'm not going to ask you whether or not you think they will, but I will ask you, by the time they get to considering a bill and even passing a bill like this, it will be months from now, presuming that they actually do it next session. It'll be January, February, or March of next year. So do you think that that helps folks who want to see, who don't want to see this kind of legislation, because they will have been in place longer, there will be less perhaps consternation the longer that these are in place? Do you think there's anything to that?
I do think that's the case. I mean, people will become more accustomed to them. Business will have largely bought into them. Government at various levels, from local to federal, will have bought into them. And they will have produced results.
Joey Fox, to Nikki's point, this seems to put Republicans in a bit of an interesting spot philosophically. Do you think that the Indiana General Assembly should ban private companies from imposing these sorts of mandates?
I don't. First of all, everybody should get vaccinated. It's safe, effective, it works. You should do it if you haven't already. Second, I'm not sure the way you phrased the first question here, Brandon, I'm not sure that the speaker said he was unsure. I think he was saying the caucus had differences of opinion and wasn't sure. Third, I think what you're seeing within the caucus are groups of people that kind of tilt more either towards the rights of private businesses and the rights of individuals. And, you know, as you can probably tell, where I personally come down on that issue, I think that's the ideological conversation that you're going to see happen, is whose rights kind of trump whom. Is it going to be the right of the private businesses to say you can or can't, or is the ultimate right there at the individual level? I think we kind of know where this is going to come out, but I think that's the fight they're going to have inside the caucus.
Yeah. To be fair, I did ask Houston, it was in response to my question. I asked him how he personally felt about the idea of banning private companies from imposing these mandates, and he said, I struggle with it. But Anne, I do want to ask.
I apologize.
No, that's fine. I want to ask you, do you think the General Assembly is going to go through and ban these mandates?
I hope not. You know, what's happening, what I'm hearing from a lot of people is, you know, I got the vaccine and what's the matter with these people? I'm sick of hearing about these people. I'm sick of these people who won't spend $20 to get a vaccine, which the government pays for, but come in and want the antibodies delivered to them when they get sick at a cost of $2,100 a person. I think those conversations are beginning to occur and there's going to be pushback. And the other thing is, I don't know what constitutional authority they have to tell people that they can't make certain parameters about employment. I mean, there are certain general statutes, and if, you know, if it's a health emergency or something along those lines, problems with, you know, or an anti-mandate for vaccines to an employer, I don't understand how they could pass that constitutionally. Because you know what? I have employees, and I mandated it, and they all got it. Okay, and they all have the sense to know that it's the right thing to do for themselves and their coworkers and their families. And, you know, frankly, I'm getting a little tired of listening to that other group out there that talk about their rights. They don't have the right to infect other people, nor do they have the right to blow up everyone's healthcare costs because they're hospitalized for months because they didn't have the sense to get vaccinated.
Well, Anne, I guess I want to know why you hate freedom so much. Indiana Republican lawmakers scored a major victory in their court battle with Governor Eric Holcomb over emergency powers. A Marion County judge ruled a new law, which allows the legislature to call itself into session during a public emergency, is constitutional. Holcomb had argued that Article 4, Section 9 of the Indiana Constitution gives the governor the sole power to call a special session, which Holcomb took to mean anything other than a regular session of the legislature, and thus includes those emergency sessions in the new law. But Judge Patrick Dietrich disagrees with Holcomb's argument. Article 4, Section 9 says, "The length and frequency of the sessions of the General Assembly shall be fixed by law." Dietrich says that special sessions clause Holcomb cites is merely an exception to the legislature's powers, not the rule. Lawmakers generally get to decide when and for how long they meet, Dietrich writes, and that makes the new emergency powers law constitutional. And Delaney, are you surprised by this ruling?
Maybe a little bit. You know, what I find really amusing, though, is that Todd Rokita is running around claiming a major victory. I mean, he originally said the governor couldn't sue without his permission. Guess what? He's wrong. Then he said the governor didn't have standing. Guess what? He's wrong. Then he said, on top of that, that the issue wasn't right. He's wrong about that, too. You know, we've said from the beginning this issue is going to be decided by the Indiana Supreme Court. And I don't think that the way that this judge is, there's a lot to argue about the way the judge interpreted the statute. And for the fact that Wisconsin did something different with their radically partisan Supreme Court is not authority for Indiana. For 170 years, this has been the provision in the Constitution that everybody has followed. We've done it through a civil war, through world wars, through other pandemics. And now we're being asked by the Attorney General and the legislature to change that because right-wing Republicans are angry that they don't have an unfettered ability to infect other people with a virus. I don't think that's a good reason to change 170 years of precedent. And I think that this is very, very, well, it's preliminary. And it is a setback. It would have been appealed even if it had gone the other way. So the Supreme Court's going to decide this one way or the other.
Mike O'Brien, given how preliminary this is just the trial court ruling. It will probably be appealed to a higher court. But it's also the first time in this whole process that Governor Holcomb has lost anything in this court battle. So how big a blow is this for him?
Well, the whole point was for Speaker of the House Todd Houston, Senate President Rod Bray, and Governor Eric Holcomb, all of the same party, of course, to resolve this question. And they all asked it, I think, openly with their own perspective, certainly in mind. But the fact that whenever you ask the court a question, you may not get the answer you like, you know, from the governor's perspective. And that certainly, I'm sure the legislature appreciated that the lower court sided with them. You know, be careful what you wish for. I think the governor said as recently as just Friday afternoon that he's looking at it. He's still not sure whether they're going to appeal or not, which is not, frankly, usual when you lose a case like this. That Ann's right is expected to be appealed all the way up to the Indiana Supreme Court. For the governor not to say we're looking at it and yes, we're planning to appeal would have been like the obvious answer. But who knows? Maybe he says, you know what, you're right. The legislature can be in session whenever they want.
Have a full time legislature.
And I don't know that that's great either. I think I think. If you look at what kind of lost to history is, you know, Speaker Houston, before he was Speaker, routinely had legislation that would actually shorten the legislative sessions. He thought they were in session and was vocal about this too long and too often. This was clearly, and from the Senate, from the legislative leadership standpoint, always about an exceptional period of time, an unprecedented time in our state's history, and the legislature's right to have an active voice in that process as big decisions were being made. So we'll see what the governor decides on appeal and what the subsequent courts have to say.
Yeah, Nikki Kelly, Mike just referenced this, but you and I and a couple other reporters talked to the governor this morning about his reaction to the loss. Did he say pretty much what you expected to hear?
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't really, you know, I asked him if it was a surprise. He said he wouldn't use that word. But yeah, it's true. He won all the procedural rulings leading up, but now he's lost on the merits, which frankly is the big one, let's be honest. And so, you know, I don't know. I mean, he's talked a lot about this not being about his administration, but about the future of the executive versus legislative. Given that background, I don't know how he doesn't appeal. I mean, it is a case of first impression. So right. I would think you want the highest court to weigh in and not just let it rest on a trial court ruling.
John Schwanis, absolutely. Realistically, even if the law is ultimately upheld and the legislature is allowed to call itself into special session or emergency session during a public emergency, is the reality, given Indiana's political history and given history in general,
Is the reality that this law will probably almost and maybe never be used?
You know, I might have thought that at some point, but as Mike suggested, people's opinions change. Todd Houston's opinions apparently have changed. Circumstances and issues change. So I wouldn't go so far as to say that it would be business as usual. I think that the stakes are too high. Again, we know how we got into this predicament. It had to do with COVID and the issues. They're fairly narrow, but the implications are not narrow. They, as Nikki suggested, this is about future governors of either party or both party and about the General Assembly, regardless of which party controls it. So I think it will be appealed in all likelihood, and I don't think we know yet exactly where the legal world will come down on this.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, please get vaccinated if you can. Enjoy the rest of your holiday weekend and join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.